Now, as Shelley said, it's the aim of existence to offer resistance to the flow of time. But how we gauge that flow internally is something we know surprisingly little about. When we're trying to make sense of what someone is saying, which I'm sort of hoping is what's going on now, just the briefest gap between sounds can alter the perceived meaning. Four candles is ambiguous, whereas four candles is unlikely to be misconstrued as handles for forks. But there's more to this than overanalyzing old Two Ronnie sketches. Research on how we're able to rapidly make decisions which hinge on tiny time intervals is leading to new ideas about how our brains measure time, including a suggestion that we have multiple neural time channels, each tuned to respond to particular durations. The work's just been published, and we're joined on the line by lead author, Dr. James Herron, from the School of Optometry and Vision Science at Bradford University. James, a background is as an optometrist, which is not what you expect for someone doing research on time perception.
No, it's not. I started as a clinician, working as an optometrist, but in our undergraduate training, one of the things we teach our students about is the visual system, and how the visual system transforms physical signals from the world around us into the perceived visual world. So a small proportion of optometrists get excited by this and end up falling straying from the path and becoming essentially neuroscientists. They're essentially looking at visual function of the brain.
You're an optometrist who's strayed. Now, I didn't realise this was a challenge. Why is it more difficult for us to know how we measure time internally than it is distance or size?
Well, one of the interesting things about time perception is that if when most people think of time perception, they think of timescales where you are saying how long something lasted. Say, was it a day? Was it 2 days? Was it half an hour? And as soon as you get over 1 or 2 seconds, you've got various cognitive mechanisms that you can use to infer how long things lasted. You could count. You could tap out a rhythm.
But this is about these tiny fractions.
Exactly. We're interested in sub-second timing, so the order of hundreds of milliseconds, a tenth of a second, say, where you don't have the option to employ these cognitive mechanisms because they're just far too slow and clunky.
And you've been trying to figure out what the mechanisms are that enable us to do that.
Exactly, and we our knowledge of how the brain performs this feat is very much in its infancy compared to our knowledge of, say, spatial processing. We've got a very good idea how the brain works out where things are, but nothing like as good an idea about how long things lasted.
So take me gently through this idea about separate neural channels.
Well, historically, the idea was that you have a pacemaker in your head, like a metronome ticking, that you would monitor, and you would look at how many ticks you'd accumulated, and you would compare that to reference memory of various other banks of ticks. But one of the things we were interested in is whether an idea put forward in the mid-90s by Richard Overy is the idea that you would have dedicated neural mechanisms that would have a preferred duration. So if you imagine banks of these neurons lined up next to each other. One would get excited by, say, 100 millisecond duration, the next one would get excited by, say, 150, and so on. And a channel-based system works by comparing the activation states across all these neural channels and coming up with a global or population response.
This sounds a bit like, to me, like a sort of time harmonics, different channels which chime with different intervals. How did you test this idea out, then?
Well, what we did was one of the ways that you can expose these systems is by looking at how they cope with adaptation. So how does the perceptual system incorporate recent sensory history or experience? So we exposed our subjects to the consistent durations. That could be a very brief flash of light, say 100 milliseconds, and we kept showing them the same duration again and again and again. And then after seeing a short duration, lots and lots of times, that could have been a flash or it could have been a burst of noise. We looked at auditory and visual time perception. So if they adapt to a short duration, we then ask them to make a judgment about how long a medium length duration lasted. And what we wondered was whether there'd be any sort of equivalent of the motion after effect or the waterfall effect, where if you look at running water that's running downwards in a waterfall and then look at the bank appears to move in the opposite direction.
So this
would be like a duration after effect, like you have a motion after effect.
And?
And the answer is that you do. Moderate durations feel that you have an illusion where moderate durations feel longer than they really are after adapting to a short duration. Equally, if you adapt to a relatively long duration, a moderate duration feels short. Now, that you can certainly explain that by channels, but the critical test is whether the system cares about the a level of differentness between the adapting stimulus and the test stimulus. So we revisited the experiments and said, okay, what happens if we adapt a really very short duration, say 25, 50 milliseconds?
And I'm going to have to give you a very short duration to describe this.
That's fine. Well, the answer is that you don't get the after effect. The after effect disappears when you have too much difference between adapting and test stimuli, and that's a hallmark of channel-based systems.
Okay, we may have to come back to that. Have to leave it there. Dr. James Herron, thank you. The clock is not only inside us, it's against us. Long-serving listeners may remember that a couple of years ago on this programme,